Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising, the Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the January 6th Eve edition. Got a big show planned for tomorrow. Former U.S. Attorney James Santel, Elections Commissioner Mark Thompson, as mentioned. And Mark's going to roll out a new show right here on Devil Radio and WAUK 540 AM. He's rolling out Monday. Evan, you're going to produce that fine product. He's calling it the Paul Revere Show. Monday night, 7 p.m. It will, I guess, record live. You'll be able to hear it live. You'll be able to call in. Same number, 844-967-2789. And also, a fine U.S. senatorial candidate, Sarah Godlewski. Apparently, she thinks Ron Johnson from the state of Wisconsin might have, you know, been a little too friendly with the insurrectionist and would like to replace Ron. We'll have her on the show 4:20 tomorrow. It's going to be a big show. Hope you tune in then as well. But your participation in this show is damn near necessary at 844-967-2789. I've got some new polling out about the January 6th, 1 year later. And Jennifer Rubin, formerly conservative columnist, now they just call it Opinion by Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post. Here is what she notes about this new polling. A frighteningly high percentage of Republicans remain in utter denial about the January 6th insurrection, choosing to exonerate the president who instigated it and downplaying the violence that occurred. Still, let's remember that a very large share of Americans, have not lost their minds nor forgotten last year's events. A new Associated Press NORC poll shows results similar to other major polling. Some 57% that say that former President Donald Trump deserves a great deal or quite a bit of blame. That number grows to 70% when we include respondents who think Trump was moderately to blame. I'd say moderately or more. Even 4 in 10 Republicans say he bears at least moderate amount of responsibility. It's still mind-blowing that 60% of Republicans say Trump bears little or no responsibility. That number, however, is 11 points lower than it was a year ago. Let's not forget, a year ago, there was 71% of Republicans that thought it wasn't Trump's fault. In addition, the poll says nearly two-thirds of Americans say the riot was extremely or very violent. And about 7 in 10 think Congress should continue investigating the events of January 6th. Two things can be true. One, millions of Americans can be deluded about January 6th and think that violence is acceptable. And two, a big majority know Trump was responsible, support the January 6th committee, and reject violence as a way to settle elections. Once we come to grips with that dichotomy, several responses should follow. First, according to Jennifer Rubin, President Biden should accurately cast the January 6th deniers and pro-violence crowd as a dangerous fringe. When your side has 60% or more of the public behind it, you should talk about it. A lot. I do, Jennifer. You need to remind voters of the stakes and deprive the menacing minority of recruiting prospects. You'd be wise to identify the source of the threat, Trump and the MAGA movement, so a majority of Americans can prevent them from recapturing power. She writes, it makes zero sense to say that we should move on because we cannot persuade the crazed minority. The point is to keep everyone else focused on the threat. Second, because we have millions of people who are receptive to calls for violence, we need a serious and visible law enforcement and national security response. Looking at you, Merrick Garland, the Justice Department should do more to highlight the threat, more to reach out to state and local law enforcement, and more to build out its capacity to fight domestic terrorism. Aside from a speech in June, the Attorney General has not done much to raise public awareness of the threat. And third, according to Rubin, we lack a serious whole-of-society response to the threat of domestic extremism. A proper one should be address inroads it has made into the military. It must include white evangelicals' recognition of the growing connection between Christian nationalism and violence. Robert P. Jones, chief executive of the Public Religion Research Institute, recently reminded us of the prevalence of Christian imagery at the Capitol. Comfortably intermingled with the tributes to white supremacy were Christian symbols and rhetoric. They were numerous Bibles, crosses, Jesus Save signs, and Jesus 2020 flags that mirrored the design of Trump's campaign flag. A recommitment to nonviolence, tolerance, and democracy must come from within these communities. You listening, pastors, white evangelicals? Finally, Rubin writes, as groups such as New America have argued, actors in civil society and philanthropy should start working to anticipate and prevent violence, reset public leaders' conduct, strengthen social cohesion, and bolster democratic reforms. In sum, she brings it to conclusion here, as will I. In sum, we have treated the problem of violent extremism too broadly, causing politicians to cower in fear of political minority, and too narrowly, focusing too much on legal and political reforms. The data tells us that democracy and nonviolence are political winners. You listening, Democrats? They are political winners. And that dabbling in political violence? What do you know? It's a loser. We need to start acting as though we are under threat from a pernicious, anti-democratic, and violent minority, because we are, writes Jennifer Rubin. Well written. You know, sort of haphazardly read, but, you know, I'm not great at reading aloud. I prefer to talk to you on the phones at 844-967-2789. Julie calling in from KTNF 950 AM. Julie, welcome.
Hi, guys. Just quickly, you know, I'm frustrated that nobody calls it an attempted coup. And you know what happens with an attempted coup? There's always another attempt. Because that's really what it was. And so what do you think about that? Why do you think the word insurrection is more commonly used?
I've used the term coup myself, Julie, and I was quite impressed with Ari Melber on MSNBC. The fact that Peter Navarro would go to MSNBC and grant an interview was a little stunning to me. You know, he's a former Trumpster, but he also wrote a book about the coup attempt, and they called it the Green Bay Sweep. And the Green Bay Sweep was this governmental effort to overturn the certification of the election. And Navarro went on live television yesterday and described, Julie, what I call a coup attempt. And Ari Melber let him, you know, hang himself for a while. And then Ari Melber, and we're going to play this sound in hour two. Hope you stick around for that. But Ari Melber basically said, what you are describing, sir, is a coup attempt. And I think what gets lost, perhaps in the, you know, the apologies of what's his face from George Washington University, is that the coup attempt was really Ted Cruz and Paul Gozer and legislative Republicans. What they were trying to do was shut down the certification of the election, throw it back to Republican-led state legislatures, or perhaps the House of Representatives, to overturn the duly elected president of the United States. And that is by definition a coup. I know, because Peter Navarro laid it out on TV last night. Ari Melber said, sir, what you're describing is a coup attempt. So I like the word. It is very appropriate. Come back, hour two. It's very appropriate that you stick around.